Hello, and welcome to the IDEA State Complaint Resource Center podcast series. Today is October 17, 2019, and this is Candace Cordiella, Director at the Advocacy Institute. The IDEA State Complaint Resource Center is a project of the Advocacy Institute. It is designed to provide information and resources to assist parents and advocates in navigating the IDEA written state complaint process, with a particular focus on systemic compliance issues. We're talking today with Maria Bloyer, Director of Programs and Outreach at Advocates for Justice and Education, located in the District of Columbia. Advocates for Justice and Education filed a state complaint in August of 2019 alleging that the District of Columbia Public Schools had violated IDEA by failing to provide qualified special education teachers to students in self-contained classrooms. The investigation by the D.C. Office of the State Superintendent of Education found violations of IDEA by DCPS as alleged in the complaint. We are pleased to have Maria joining us today to discuss this complaint. The complaint and the state's investigation report are available on our website. Maria, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Candace. I'm really excited about today's conversation.
Okay, so let's begin by having you give our listeners a quick overview of your organization and its mission.
Sure. So AJE, Advocates for, is the District of Columbia's Internet Training and Information Center. I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, every state has at least one Parent Training and Information Center. AJE is the PTI for the District of Columbia, which means that we are the organization that receives a little teeny, teeny, tiny bit of money from the federal government under IDEA to make sure that families know what their rights are when they're navigating the special education process. At AJE, we do a lot of that work through trainings, advice and counsel for families, and systemic advocacy efforts like this and related policy advocacy work.
Okay, so as you mentioned, there is at least one Parent Training and Information Center funded by the federal government through the funds appropriated annually for IDEA, at least one in every state. They are distributed based on population. So, for example, in California, there's five or six. In small states, there may be only one. But there's at least one in every state. And the information on the contact information for all of the parent centers is available on a website called www.parentcenterhub.org. Can you tell us what led your PTI's involvement in this issue that is the basis of this complaint?
So like a lot of PTIs, we are a parent-led organization, and the overwhelming majority of our staff have a personal connection to this work. And one of our staff members was profoundly frustrated because her child had significant involvement on the autism spectrum and did not have a classroom teacher for several months. And she was very frustrated, and we talked about it as an organization and decided that one way we could support her was to file the state complaint. The reason we looked at it really was because we knew that her experience was not uncommon, that a lot of other families had very similar experiences, and it was difficult because informal dispute resolution also had not been successful. We'd asked, hey, is there going to be a teacher in this room? When is there going to be a teacher in this room? And never got an answer. So it became obvious that a more formal resolution was needed.
Oh, that's very interesting, and I'm glad that you actually pointed out that probably a majority of people that you will encounter working at the PTIs around the country are in fact, have come to this work through a personal connection, being most often being the parent of a child with a disability. So tell us why you chose to use the state complaint process to address this issue.
Sure. Well, there were really two reasons. One is because we're a small organization. There are six of us on staff at HAE, and we have limited bandwidth and limited capacity. So that's a big part of the decision-making process. State complaints take less resources than, say, a due process complaint. They are an easier administrative lift, and they're less time-consuming than a due process complaint. And the other reason that we wanted to do a state complaint is because, you know, my colleague had a student in that classroom, obviously. But again, all of us come to this work because, you know, we care about all the kids. And we did not want to leave this problem unaddressed for every other child in that classroom. And one of the unique things about a state complaint is that you can file on behalf of other people, you know, people who you do not represent, and you can file organizationally. And that's what we did. We filed as an organization alleging violations. And this meant that my colleague's child's needs could be met, but also every other kid in that classroom would have the state, you know, looking at the education they received from a paraeducator, basically.
Right. So you could have assisted individual parents in writing individual complaints to the state about their particular issues, but you elected to kind of combine them all, and in part because you, as you mentioned, you could do that as an organization, and that's one of the things that we talk a lot about on the Resource Center, that this is the only dispute resolution option in IDEA that can be used by people other than the parent or of the child, which makes it quite unique. You don't even have to be you don't even have to live in the state where you're filing the complaint. So lots of child serving organizations should consider this as an approach. So your complaint alleged that there was a systemic violation by the D.C. public schools regarding the special education personnel delivering special education to students in self-contained classrooms. In other words, the complaint cited specific situations in four schools in the district as illustrative of an overall noncompliance. Was that your approach?
It was. Once we knew that this was happening at one school, you know, we talked to parents all day long. AJE gets, you know, somewhere between 650 to 850 intakes a year. So we talked to a lot of parents. So we knew that this was happening not just at one school. We looked at our data. We talked to some of the families that, you know, we'd been in contact with, and we identified four classrooms, and we were very specific looking at self-contained classrooms. Four self-contained classrooms that had that were not staffed with a certified special education teacher during last school year. And our initial complaint listed just those four schools. And then when we posted online that we filed a state complaint about four schools not having adequate special education teachers, other parents reached out to us and said, you know, hey, my kid's classroom didn't have a certified special education teacher for months. So that's why if you look at the final decision, you see that there are six schools listed. It's because we added two more based on information we received from families.
Okay. So can you tell us what the findings of the state's investigation of your complaint were?
Sure. So the state investigated mostly, honestly, by talking to principals. They didn't talk to all that many parents in their investigation. And I appreciate it in the decision. And if you look at the decision on page 5 of it, they do a really nice chart of the date, the period of time where there wasn't a classroom teacher, where the special education teacher was missing. And then they listed the period of time where there is a non-qualified substitute employee. And then if there was a qualified the point, that's listed in the third column, in the fourth column. And they basically found that a lot of these self-contained classrooms did not have a certified special education teacher in them, and that frequently the class was being supervised or led by someone who was not a certified special education teacher, and frequently not a teacher of any type, frequently a paraprofessional was staffing those classrooms. And I think that's something that parents see a fair amount. You know, we do have a real shortage of special education teachers in this country, and it can be hard to staff schools adequately. So a lot of times I think parents see paraprofessionals teaching classrooms when really they shouldn't be. Right. So the state found that there is a violation, and they ordered compensatory education for the children in those classrooms. And then I was really excited to see that they also ordered DCPS to come up with a system for, one, employing licensed teachers. So, you know, making sure you have a system of employing licensed teachers and tracking the current licensure of the student, of the teachers that they have, not just the special education teachers, but all of them. And then they also need to come up with a plan to ensure that licensed teachers are available to provide specialized instruction to students with disabilities, you know, in the event of an absence or, you know, a teacher needing to leave mid-year or going on maternity leave, things like that. The state required that they come up with a plan.
So, were you pleased with the corrective action that the state came up with? I think they only addressed going back and looking at the need for compensatory education for the students who were in the four, and then it ended up being five classrooms that you detailed in your report. They're not going to go back and look at more broadly at services that might have been deficient for, students in other classrooms. So, in a way, you got half a loaf, maybe, with regard to the corrective action that was ordered. Is that how you would describe it?
Yes. I mean, I'm really happy that, and I think I try to look at this from an efficiency standpoint. I'm really happy that the individual children in those five classrooms are going to be getting compensatory education. I'm excited about that. I am less excited about the fact that I don't have a direct mechanism to monitor the implementation of that corrective action plan. So I don't have a direct way of knowing, is DCPS actually reaching out to all these families? Are they actually creating good compensatory education plans? And that's part of the reason why we've tried to be really public about this,
right.
Because I want to make sure these families get everything that they're entitled to. So that's part of it. You know, that kind of goes both ways. I'm really happy about part of that, but I'm also, a little bit worried. And then I am a little bit frustrated, honestly, that there wasn't an investigation of all of DCPS's self-contained classrooms. I happen to think if, you know, I allege that there's a problem in six classrooms and five out of those six classrooms indicates that, you know, there is a problem and you need to do corrective action, I would think that that would be a flag to look at all of the self-contained classrooms in DCPS. So in that regard, I was, you know, a little bit disappointed that they didn't take this opportunity, especially because, you know, the kids in our kids in self-contained classrooms are our most vulnerable kids.
Right.
You know, so I think it's really important that we look after them and, you know, make sure that they're getting everything that they're legally entitled to. So in that sense, it was frustrating.
Right.
And it was also candidly frustrating that, you know, earlier this week I had to file a substantially similar state complaint about two more classrooms. You know, that's also hard. You know, I'm happy that we've gotten some relief here, but no attorney wants to have to keep filing the same complaint over and over again. We do this work because we're trying to fix things.
Right. And what are your feelings about how there will be some monitoring of the implementation, the development and implementation of this system-wide process that DCPS has been directed to develop with regard to ensuring that they're employing licensed teachers in schools and tracking the current licensure status of its employees? It was certainly shocking to me when I read their letter of findings that they found in the schools that they investigated that of the 27 employees that had served these children, only three of them had a teacher licensure. So that's a pretty astonishing rate of non-compliance. So they seem to have a very significant problem on their hands. And do you plan to try to keep an eye on how they're going to implement this system-wide corrective action plan that they have been ordered to do?
Yes. So on my calendar, I've got a tickler I've got a calendar reminder for 65 days after I got the letter to ask for a copy of the corrective action plan. In the District of Columbia letters of decision, these state complaint findings are not published by our state educational agency.
Right.
And those corrective action plans are not routinely shared with complainants. Institutional complainants like AJE or, you know, individual parent complainants. We don't see the corrective action plan. So my thinking is that we'll have to use some other tools at our disposal. We'll ask nicely first, and then, you know, probably look at maybe a FOIA request to get a copy of the corrective action plan, because honestly, I do think monitoring is incredibly important.
Right.
You know, and otherwise we have no way of knowing whether or not these changes have actually happened.
Right. Right. And, you know, I would just add that in the work that we've done for the State Complaint Resource Center, in fact, we have posted the names of the handful, and I emphasize handful, of states that do in fact post their investigation reports of state complaints, and there's only a few, and even of the few that do post them, we make clear that that there's only two states that post them in a way that's in any way even useful. So we encourage advocates to pursue with their State Department of Education, a policy that would have them begin to both post their complaints and post them in a manner that is helpful and useful to parents and advocates. One of the benefits of that is that if you have an issue that you are thinking about, you know, basing a state complaint on, it gives you the ability to go and search how the state has found with in complaints that were on a similar or the same issue and or regarding this violations within the same LEA. So that information can be very helpful in you know, prepping for filing a state complaint, and you can also then see how the state ruled on them. So we are very much hopeful that more states might begin to post their complaint findings, just as IDEA requires states to post and make public their due process hearing resolutions. I did want to mention, since your complaint was based on the violation of IDEA regulation that requires states to have qualified personnel, that there's a process that states engage in every spring where they compile their annual application for federal funds that goes into the U.S. Department of Education. And that application includes the state making a number of assurances to the U.S. Department of Ed, a variety of things that they are assuring the federal government that they are complying with. And one of those assurances is that the state must establish and maintain qualifications to ensure that personnel necessary to carry out the purposes of the act are appropriately and adequately prepared and trained, including those personnel have the content, knowledge, and skills to serve children with disabilities. So, and I review some of these applications as they come up every year. And I never see a state say that they don't, that they aren't doing this. So states are making they're making a commitment to the federal government that they are, in fact, ensuring, personnel requirements. And yet we're finding situations like this, which is very disconcerting, given that this is a condition of receiving their federal funds under IDEA. And in fact, the current annual appropriation for IDEA is just a little over $12 billion per year that flows out to the states and is intended for the states to use that money to help provide special education to students with disabilities. So if the states and in turn the school districts are not, in fact, complying with that requirement, then they're receiving their federal funds under false pretenses. Now, and these annual applications for funds are put up on State Department of Ed's websites every year for a public comment period. And so, parents and advocates should look for them and comment on them with regard to questioning whether the states are actually complying with all of these assurances that they're giving to the federal government. So what can other parent training and information centers and disability advocates more broadly learn from this complaint, Maria?
Well, I think there's a couple they can learn. One is that the state complaint process can be a really effective and efficient way to have a systems impact and a way to impact more students and more children than you would otherwise be able to. I think that's to think about. Most of us doing this work are in small organizations with limited resources, and the state complaint process is a very effective way to kind of punch above your weight to have more impact than you would otherwise. I think something else that people to think about in terms of the state complaint, again, is its unique position as a dispute resolution tool that's available to people who aren't directly impacted but are aware of the issue. One of the hardest things that we ask families to do is to, you know, advocate for their own kids and push against, you know, the schools that they're working with and living in for years. And there's a relationship cost to that. And one thing I really like about the state complaint process is it removes that burden, that relationship burden, but also the financial and additional burden. You know, we're not asking parents to act as, you know, mini attorneys general, you know, when we have an organization file. So I think that's something else that is a really unique advantage to the state complaint process. And then I think the final thing about the state complaint process that I think is helpful is that it strengthens the overall oversight and monitoring capacity and ability and authority of the state educational agency. I think any time that we're making sure that the limited resources that go to our kids are being well used and used appropriately, that's important. And I think it's important for us to advocate in a way that makes the system work better. And the state process can really do that, especially because it requires corrective actions and it can require systemic corrective action. So I'm hoping, honestly, that after this complaint, DCPS as a whole is a better organization for serving kids, you know, including kids I've never met.
Right. And that's a great point. You know, and in fact, in the dispute resolution guidance that the U.S. Department of Education put out a few years ago, and we have a link to that whole piece of guidance on our website and then have excerpted the section on state complaints. And they point out in that document that the state complaint system is a opportunity for states to, in fact, it gives them another tool in their toolbox for doing their general supervisory responsibilities, overseeing the monitoring and enforcement of IDEA in their local school district. So that I'm glad you made that point. So thanks very much for joining us. Thanks for sharing your complaint and your letter of findings by the state. We wish you the best in your continued work and appreciate so much everything that you do for children with disabilities. So thanks, Maria.
Thank you. And again, thank you for everybody listening.
Okay, hold on.